Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Only half of Irish farmers have a private pension, with that figure even lower among sheep and cattle farmers, where many are well past their retirement age. So what can we learn from our European neighbours who have put in place a range of supports to help farmers retire and pass their land smoothly on to the next generation? Anne Kinsella is an agricultural economist at Chagask with a long-standing interest in intergenerational farming. She's been collaborating with Maynooth University to compare Ireland with our European neighbours. Anne joins us now from our Galway studio. Good morning, Anne. How are you?
Good morning, Philip. How are you?
I have been in countless marts where the vast majority of people at those marts are people well into their 70s, too poor to retire, they say, too old to increase productivity on the farm, they say, and very often owning too small a farm to persuade somebody else, somebody younger, to come and farm it with them. It's really quite a bind that we've worked ourselves into.
Yeah, absolutely, Philip. And as the farming population age, adequate pension for farmers and the financial security of them is crucial in not only maintaining the vitality of rural communities, but in facilitating generational renewal. And there's been a growing concern around this issue. So to put it all in context, a significantly higher proportion of the workforce in the agricultural sector is aged 65 and over compared to the general population, with approximately 25% of the farming labour force over 65, while only 4% of the general population labour force is in that age category. So that farmers face unique challenges regarding pension provision due to their lower and variable incomes, also due to the intergenerational nature of farm ownership, and in that they succeed to the farm later in their working life, and also with regard to the cultural attitudes towards retirement around the social capital aspects and farmers' sense of place and their attachment to the land.
What is the pension situation then, for the state pension situation, for somebody who is sitting on what might look like on paper it's a very considerable financial asset, but it isn't exactly liquid?
No, exactly. And in Ireland, a significant portion of farms have limited pension cover, with a lot of them citing that they will never retire from previous research that we have actually conducted. So I might just mention, first of all, that in Ireland, we have a three-pillar pension system in Ireland. Pillar one is the basic state pension, and this is to ensure a minimum level of income aimed to reduce the incidence of poverty in old age, while pillar two and three is aimed at supplementing the basic pension to improve the quality of life in old age. So as part of this research, we looked at the basic state pension, and this is looking at the contributory and non-contributory pensions. And for farmers, a lot of them may not qualify for the state pension, be that the contributory or non-contributory, due to gaps in their pay-related social insurance, their PRSI. And this creates difficulties also for asset-rich but cash poor farmers with regard to the non-contributory pension if they haven't made contributions. And if a farmer retains title to even a small amount of land, if about 15 acres of land after retirement, the imputation rules may mean that he will fail the means test. So therefore, he may not be entitled to a state pension.
I know, sir, 15 acres is nothing, and presumably very often the house that they're living on is on that plot of land and inextricably linked with it. So selling up is probably not an option either, because where are they going to go?
Exactly, exactly. So it puts farmers in a very, very difficult situation. And some of your listeners might say, well, then a lot of farmers work off farm, like they do not rely solely on their farm income. And yes, that is correct, with over 40% of farms across all farming systems having an off-farm job. But there's a higher percentage in the lower income systems, like the cattle and sheep farms, where over 50% of these have an off-farm job. But so too, a lot of these may have started working off-farm later in life, so therefore they may not have built up adequate contributions in order to get a contributory pension from that job either. And if we look at the private pension coverage, a key challenge here facing Irish and European agricultural sector is the low level of private pension cover among farmers. And a recent study by the Department of Agriculture revealed that only 50% of Irish farmers have private pension cover. But again, there's disparities here across farming systems, with around 70% of dairy and tillage farms having private pensions compared to only 40% of sheep and cattle farms.
Which is kind of understandable when you look at what the average incomes are on particularly some of those smaller suckler farms. I think was your Chagas figure 13,000 euro as the average figure last year. So, you know, where is anybody going to find money for pension contributions in that?
Well, we just published our midterm review report there on Monday last, looking at the forecasts for the incomes for this coming year. And owing to higher cattle and sheep prices and some other aspects, there's actually the income this year will be up. But having said that, the average income across all systems is still quite low, and in particular the cattle and sheep farms, where they're still only averaging 26,000-27,000 for cattle and just over 30,000 for sheep, and that's in an extremely good income year.
Okay.
So farmers face a lot of income variability and volatility.
One last question about the problem before we get to solutions, because it strikes me that there's a big part of this is a cultural and a habit question as well, because a lot of those people that you would meet at Marts are just keeping their hand in at breeding and selling cattle, because that's what they do, that's what they've always done, that's their social outlet, is to go to the mart once a month and make a day out of it. How big a problem is that, in that we haven't found alternative pathways to a meaningful retirement life for these people?
Well, when we look at farmers, it's more a way of life. It is where they make their income, but also it's a way of life, and the whole social capital aspect of farming and continuing farming and their sense of place within the community. And as you say, a lot of them continue farming past retirement age because of that social connection and their place within the community. But so too, some of these farmers have to continue farming, because if they haven't set up a correct pension plan, in that making their PRSI contributions or not having a private pension, well, then the only way they can live is by continuing to farm. But having said that, Irish farmers are no different from their counterparts across Europe, where pension security for the self-employed, there's low levels of pension uptake. But this has been improved by recent pension reforms. But nevertheless, gaps still persist, so that self-employed remain a vulnerable group. And farmers are a subset of that self-employed group, and they are even more vulnerable.
So talk to me then about the countries that are getting this right, that are providing, through a combination of stick and carrots, means for farmers to actually have a meaningful pension and move on from the farm, so that this land can be passed on to the next generation of farmers who are champing at the bit to actually get out there and do something. I believe Austria is one country that has made significant strides here recently.
Yeah, well, in order to assess Ireland's position relative to best practice, we evaluated pension systems for farmers in five European countries. That is Austria, Finland, France, Germany and Poland. And the reasons that we selected these countries is that they are all members of the European Network of Agricultural Protection Systems, ENASP. And these offer tailored social welfare schemes for farmers. And the pension systems in these countries provide an important benchmark for international comparison, and they recognise farmers as a unique cohort of individuals, unlike in Ireland. And retirement pensions is one of the key areas of interest. So each of these countries has their own approach to farm-specific social insurance, in contrast to Ireland, which operates a single social security system with a general distinction between the employed and self-employed workers. So in these countries, they have heavily subsidised pension arrangements for farmers, and subsidisation takes the form of reduced contribution levels, cover for family members working in the farm, and lower requirements in terms of the contribution years.
Does it work, Anne? Does it square the circle that we're looking at right now?
Well, having looked at these countries, we've come up with a few recommendations, and it has been demonstrated that these countries' models could usefully be implemented in Ireland. Their policy changes required in Ireland to ensure that a basic level of pension for all of those that are engaged in farming. And if we look at the Irish and French systems, these require the highest level of contribution years at over 40 years, while Austria and Germany only require 15 years of contributions, while Finland has no minimum contribution period. And drawing on other experiences from these countries, several other key lessons emerge for improving pension provisions. Some of these include offering early retirement incentives. In Finland, the model shows how financial support can ease the path to retirement. Another policy recommendation coming forward for these countries is to make PRSI contributions mandatory for workers, so that to ensure that young farmers and family members build up their entitlements from the start. And another policy recommendation is to register spouses and partners for PRSI. And it's also important, as part of this, to provide transitional support in order to help current farmers that may not have adequate cover to close that gap. And transitional provisions need to be put in place to ensure that those currently not covered do not remain disadvantaged, even if mandatory registration is introduced.
Okay. And in these countries that you examined, I can see the sense of doing something like linking stamps, what we used to call stamps, to the years that you're in receipt of a single farm payment, so that you are contributing towards your own pension later in life. But do these measures solve that cultural piece, that question of, frankly, and there's no delicate way of saying this, removing the older farmer from the farm so that somebody younger can come in and take over, and supplying that farmer, that older farmer, with a sufficient pension, sufficient income to move on in life and do something different?
Well, I suppose older farmers have a lot to also give. They've a lot of learnings and experience on the farm. So it's not about
Fair
really, you know, they can maybe work in partnership or in cooperation with the younger farmer. And I think there's a lot of opportunities out there for farmers that are heading down that road towards retirement or even past the age of retirement to maybe engage with other activities on the farm, like, say, social farming. I think there's a huge opportunity there for farmers to engage maybe as a mentor on their farm, and to continue working, but maybe to step back
Yes, I know, but you're being very glass half full about it, because there'll be so many younger farmers listening to this and saying, I don't need that old fella and his dinosaur ways knocking about telling me how to do things. So there's a lot of difficult conversations to be had here.
Yes, and I know there's other research that we've recently done as well, actually asking farmers about their pension plans and their retirement plans and what provisions they've put in place. And there's a lot of, I suppose, mistrust with regard to, you know, putting money aside into private pensions and farmers not adequately providing for their retirement. So I think in this space, a lot needs to be done in order to engage with farmers, to inform them better about their plans, like what options are there for them. And if they do not have full PRSI contributions in order to get the full contributory pension, well then is there something we can do or work with them around that? Because as I mentioned earlier on, like even if a farmer has 15 acres of poor quality land, that may mean that he's actually not entitled to get the state pension. You know, so that is definitely something that needs to be looked at.
Indeed, because it might be poor quality agricultural land, but it could be very valuable if you put solar panels on it.
Exactly.
So the asset is going to be judged in that way. You run in Chagask discussion groups where exactly the kind of conversation that you're talking about now could be taking place. But again, my experience of those discussion groups is that they tend to be populated by younger farmers and not the cohort that you're trying to reach here.
Yes, so maybe there is an opportunity for maybe setting up a discussion group for older farmers to formally discuss these options. But we also run transferring the family farm clinics in Chagas, which is looking at all the succession plans, and they are extremely well attended and they take part annually. So as part of that, there's presentations on retirement and on pensions and informing farmers about their options as they move towards retirement, or as they're even at the age after retirement when they should have handed over the farm, but they still continue to farm.
Indeed, a conversation that should be taking place on up to 137,000 farms, if you think about it, because it's a conversation that has to unfold over a number of years, can't all be done in the course of one day. Anne Kinsella, agricultural economist at Chagas, thank you very much. Let's take a break.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.